Hi, I'm Jonathan. You may remember me as the co-host of Through the Aftermath, which you're listening to as we speak. But I'm here today to talk to you about something very serious to every one of us. I'm here to talk to you about a new sickness out there in the Fallout gaming wasteland. It's something we've all seen, and whether we know it or not, it's tearing our gaming world apart. No, it's not radiation sickness. That was already here. And it's not genetic mutation. If you've got that, you're already screwed. Unless somehow you lucked out and all that happened was you grew a third NAD. No, friends, the sickness I'm referring to is companion character friendly fire suicide. We've all been there, out in the wasteland with one of the various companion NPC characters happily at our side, laughing with us, fighting alongside us, and that's when it happens. One of the companion characters walks right in front of you as you are about to take a shot at the enemy. How many times have you lined up that perfect headshot through your sniper scope, only to have Boone run out in front of you, take the brunt of the shot, and then suddenly turn hostile?
You're mine!
All because he didn't watch where he was going. And how many times have we all had that moment where we used VATS mode on our Pip-Boy and locked in three shots directly into a super mutant's left kneecap, only to hit the E key and watch in unstoppable slow-motion horror as Veronica walked her fat butt right into your carefully planned gunfire. Oh. Only to have her retaliate and join the super mutant in attacking you.
Come on!
Next thing you know, half the people in town suddenly want to kill you on sight. All because Veronica doesn't understand the concept of get the frack out of my way when I'm shooting something.
Hey!
You know, it happens all the time to every one of us. Just what is it that makes these NPC companions want to jump in front of our bullets? What causes these suicidal tendencies? Is it loneliness? Maybe a deep-rooted hatred at the fact that we can wander aimlessly in the wasteland while they, when not grouped with us, have to go back and wait in the hotel room for possibly weeks on end simply because you'd rather group with the ghoul companion. The truth is, we're not sure what causes it, and the NPCs aren't telling. Mainly because, why do you feel the need to jump in front of my assault rifle, isn't part of their scripted dialogue tree. No one can deny it, though. There's something wrong with our NPC companion characters. Something needs to be done. Only together can we stop this madness. Only together can we stop these otherwise great NPC companions from feeling the gripping need to kill themselves by jumping into the brunt of our own gunfire.
Need a medic.
For just pennies a day, we can stop their suffering. Remember, NPC companions are people too, even if they are insane, and also get stuck in the wall sometimes. So give a hoot. Before you shoot, make sure your companions scoot. And that's astute. Oh, who wrote that last part?
Welcome back, everyone, to this 49th episode of Through the Aftermath. I am your host, Sean, and with me once again is Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
You know what? This is the part like where we went back and watched Star Wars after 20 years, and then we saw like words going up the screen, and we're like, they're new words! These are the new words. People are listening to this going, this isn't a rerun. These are new words.
Yes, we're coming at you. It's funny because we were just looking at this. It's this week. It's actually when this releases, hopefully, it will be 2 years since we officially, in quotes, ended the podcast. And since then, we've done, you know, this is our third episode we've done now since we stopped doing the podcast.
This is true. Well, it's like the show, like us in the show, you know, we were married, but then we, you know, the show broke up with us, but then we're still dating, you know, like the show comes by and it's like, hey, what's up? You watching TV? Can I watch with you? And then, but nothing serious, but then every once in a while, like, me and the show, we make out.
Yeah.
Did I just say that out loud?
I'm glad it was you in the show. I didn't have anything to do.
Well, somebody out there is like, so is the show? What is the show a chick? I'm like, oh, I hope so.
I haven't checked, but
I never looked, and that's that, now it's the crying game. Oh God.
Oh jeez.
Oh God. Oh. Already we're off to a great start.
See, you all missed us. You missed this, didn't you? Jonathan and I literally, we don't, you know, we haven't talked in a while. I mean, just over email, but then we get on Skype, and like Jonathan was just saying, you know, he had to update Skype an hour earlier to make sure it was updated. So we get on Skype, and we talk for about 5 minutes, and then bam, we just start recording. And here, this is what happens right here. This is the beauty.
It just creates itself. It's amazing.
It does. Okay, so I put a little teaser on our Facebook page, and if you're not following us on Facebook, you need to, because we like to, you know, we still talk with people a lot on there and you know, kind of communicate with movies we've seen that we like or games we like. So I said, hey, what would you guys think about us doing maybe not a regular show again, but, you know, when we do a show every once in a while, then it would be about, like, some movies we've seen, some post-apocalyptic movies. See, it's been so long, I can't even say post-apocalyptic anymore. And a lot of people said that they would really enjoy that. So I think that that's what we're going to do here. And it's not to say that we're not going to talk about anything else. It's just that, you know, movies are one of those things that it's easy, you know, for us to watch a bunch of them and sit down and just... And Jonathan has seen every movie anyway, so it's like I can say, hey, have you seen this obscure movie from 1975? And he's like, yes, in fact, I love that movie. So that's actually what we're going to talk about in the show. So so I'm really excited because it's, you know, it's a time for us to talk about, to get back into this, you know, get back into talking about this. And we were talking a little bit before, and it's like Jonathan says that, you know, we'll be doing stuff out in, you know, out and about in real life, and we'll say, ooh, we have to talk about that on the next show, and, oh, that might be 6 months from now, but we'll do it.
Well, it's the problem. Everything I was telling Sean right before, like, the minute we stopped doing the show, all of a sudden, here come movies, games.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, come on. It's like the world just did it on purpose.
Yeah.
So that would be the equivalent of the show dressing up fancy now that we're not together. And it's like, oh, okay, now that you're with other guys, you can dress like that. I see. You know,
I see a pattern here.
Yeah, there is. You know, me and the show, we just got, I don't know, man. I got to face the facts that I'm going to end up cutting off my ear and sending it to it in a box. I don't know.
Nice.
That's how it is.
Nice Van Gogh reference.
Oh, man, I don't know. Somebody out there is like, well, that's it. I'm done. Whoop.
No, I think that happened a long time ago. We have our core listeners, and they we love them. They put up with this, so we love them for it.
That's right.
Okay, so let's start talking about these movies then, because there are, and we're not going to do, you know, we can't do news because, you know, we would do that every 6 months, and it would be a 16-hour show if we wanted to cover all the news. But I want to talk about a couple movies, and I'll start this out. The first one that I wanted to talk about, now I did see quite a few. I don't remember a lot of them, which says a lot about both me being old and the you know, the impact of these movies. But two of them really had an impact on me, and the first one was Death Race 2000.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
This is a show, this is a movie that came out the year I was born, 1975, and I was looking on Netflix for a post-apocalyptic movie, and I'm, you know, kind of looking around here and there, and I see this one, it pops up, and there are sequels, and I'm like, well, this came out the year I was born, I've never even heard of it, like, what's my problem? So I check it out, and it has David Carradine, and it has Sylvester Stallone. I mean, this is wasn't it Sylvester Stallone's first movie?
It was, and it, you know what? To be honest, it's probably one of my favorite ones that he does because he's just, you can tell the ego's not there yet. He's just playing himself.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I was watching it, and I'm like, wow, he's kind of like Rocky, but with, like, maybe on drugs a little bit, where he's just kind of out of control, and he does have kind of a temper in the movie, so it's like, it's not, you know, Rocky's a good guy. But you can tell he's got that, you know, he's got some deep-seated aggression in there, and that's why he's boxing and all this stuff. But this is like Rocky minus the organization and the withdrawal of you know, not killing people is basically because...
Yeah, it's like tongue-in-cheek humor, basically.
Yeah, that too. I mean, it's Okay, so let me kind of do an overview of this for the three of us out there who have never seen this movie. I was one of you, but now I've seen the movie. But it's a movie about a dystopian future, and I think it might be, I don't know if it would be a stretch to call it post-apocalyptic, but it is, it's a completely different future. And what's funny is I love the old version of what the future will look like. And it's kind of like with Fallout, you know, how they play it off of what the 50s post-apocalyptic future will look like. So it still has like tube radios and 1957 Chevys, and, you know. So, I mean, that's kind of what this is like. It's like, this is what the future will look like, but there's still, you know, these 70s cars and 70s hairstyles and, you know, 70s clothes and everything. And I love that. So it's this race that goes on, and the way you score points is by killing people, by running them over. So it's like this cross-country race, and each one has their own weapons on the car. They have their own kind of style, and you know, they're almost like NASCAR drivers, where, you know, people have their favorites and people cheer them on. And David Carradine plays Frankenstein, who's this character who's kind of like a, you know, he's been burned before, and he's been in explosions, and, you know, he's been basically brought back to life. I mean, he's a fan favorite because he always wins. I mean, he always wins these races, but he's also very ruthless. He just doesn't care about anything, and he'll run over, you know. There's one scene where it's a strange thing. It's kind of hard to explain, but they're driving by this hospital, and the hospital staff wheels all the old people out to the street because they want these drivers to kill them all. And and if that's not strange enough, what happens actually is, you know, the nursing staff pushes them all out there, and then they kind of back up onto the sidewalk. And so David Carradine takes it upon himself to drive through the nurses and doctors instead of the old people. You know, he just drives right through them and kills them all. And that's kind of, you know, his way of saying, I play by my own rules. You know, I'm one of those kind of guys. It has this dynamic too between the drivers and the navigators. And you know, that plays off a big part of it, because there's always, you know, there's the turmoil between the two, and there's the, you know, I can do what I want, and then the navigator's like, no, you have to do it this way. So it kind of has this actual story in there. But the best part about it, you know, you can tell I'm kind of glossing over the story and stuff, because the best thing about it, not only the cars are amazing, because they're like fiberglass, you know, 70s paint job. You know, back in the 70s, they modified cars with a lot of fiberglass and Bondo, where they'd, like, you know, round off the edges, and they had these crazy futuristic, in quotes, designs. And that's really what this is. I mean, like, Frankenstein drives this crazy car with, like, fins and stuff. And then I forgot what Sylvester Stallone's character's name is. It's like Machine Gun.
Yeah, it's like Machine Gun Joe.
Oh yeah, Machine Gun Joe. That's what it is.
Yeah,
and he has machine guns on his car, you know, of course, it's kind of crazy, because at first you're like, it's kind of like the Running Man, you know,
where it's, it like is. This it's game very show. Running Man. That was actually the first thing I thought of when I went back and watched it again.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the Running Man and Cannonball Run, and you know, yeah. and you know, it's got some other movies in there, but I think it's kind of a crazy movie. Jonathan, you were saying that it's so bad it's good.
Well, this will put it in perspective for a lot of people. The movie was directed by Roger Corman, who is the quintessential 60s, 70s, you know, this Island Earth Mystery Science Theater ends up on every one of Mystery Science Theater's episodes. Roger Corman was renowned for doing these ridiculously low-budget, priceless movies that end up being like cult classics.
Yeah, yeah. And that's this is a perfect example.
Yeah, it is, and it's funny because the whole time they're doing it, there is so much tongue-in-cheek humor to it. I mean, right down to the fact that, you know, the government, the American government and the president are obviously this evil regime that has taken over, and we're fighting against the French, and I mean, there's tons of these cameos. I mean, David Carradine is the lead character, which you guys all know either from, you know, his part that I remember him from the most, which is Grasshopper on Kung Fu Or Kill Bill. He was Bill, you know. Yeah. So the whole time I'm watching this again, I'm just waiting for him to do the Bill lines because it's just priceless. But the other one did. There was quite a few, but the one that actually blew me away going back and watching it was John Landis, the director.
Oh,
he does a cameo. He does a cameo because he was brand new. Him and James Cameron used to work for Roger Corman. They both got their start from it. In fact, you know, he was kind of the pickup for a lot of these people back in the 70s. Well, John Landis, he's the guy who when they're putting up the banner, Sylvester Stallone tries to ram him in the pole, and he tells him to kill the guy. He puts his thumb down like, kill him.
Oh, yeah.
And that's John Landis, who everybody knows from, you know, gosh, the guy's been doing so many movies forever. Like, he did, you know, he did Trading Places with Dan Aykroyd. He did Twilight Zone, the movie. He did the Thriller video. Blues Brothers. Yeah,
Animal
he did the Thriller
House, yeah.
Movie. Yep, all those is him. Yeah. And so for him to make a cameo in that is just it's like going back and watching the first Terminator and going, is that Bill Paxton with spiky hair? You know, it was great to see. I love this stuff because, you know, back then John Landis was part of that, you know, Rat Pack with, you know, Spielberg and Lucas and all these groups. So I love seeing him in stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and there's one of the stars, too, is there's this lady named Mary Warrenoff, and I don't know – probably her name wouldn't ring a bell, but she has been in every 80s movie, every 80s TV series, like at least one episode of everything. I mean, Mr. Belvedere, St. Elsewhere, all that stuff. She is, I don't know how to explain it. When you see her, you'll be like, oh yeah, I've seen her. She's really tall. She's kind of like, I guess you would say like an Amazon, you know, she always plays like Amazon parts, like, you know, like a big woman and you know, those kind of parts. And she's in this movie and she does a great job. I think this is one of her first, not her first, but one of her first movies. But I think it's funny because it's like, you know, she's one of those that you see and you're like, I know I've seen her before. What is she? And then you go on IMDb and you're like, wow, she's been in 50 different things.
Everything. Yeah.
One of everything. Yeah. But so, I mean, I guess I would say overall, I mean, I like the movie, and if I were to give it, I don't know if we want to start doing like a rating system for these on the show. I don't know if we want to do that, because I know we used to do that a long time ago. We used to give like silly.
Yeah, we'll give it. I would give it as far as, you know, let's give it a rating. Okay. I would say on my list, and now I'm going to preface where I'm coming from on this too, because as a movie in general, it's ridiculous. It's low budget and it's cheesy 70s. I love the music. I got to say it straight up. When you see the party and everybody's like, I don't know. Yeah. I think that's hysterical. As far as cult classics go, it gets four so goods out of five.
Oh, four out of five. Okay.
Yeah, I give it four out of five because it is truly a cult classic, and it did set the stage for a lot of movies, including the Death Race movies that are on Netflix right now.
Yeah, that's true. How many are there? They're like, two or three?
There's actually, there's three of them. One of them actually is, it's kind of in a class of its own, and then the other two are kind of cult classics that are actually, in my opinion, better movies. Two and three were really good. I recommend
those
them.
Out. Yeah, I'll have to check those out. Maybe we could talk about it on a future episode. I would give it, if we're doing so goods, I would give it 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
I think just a little bit less. I like it. I think it was great. I got to respect, you know, movies came out in 1975. I mean, Tommy, the Who's Tommy, that came out in 75. It was a great movie. But, I don't know. It's just one of those things where I watched it, and I had to watch it in parts, which wasn't really the movie's fault, but I think that might have had something to do with it. My attention span was, you know, a little gone on it. But I think what the parts I did watch and kind of pay attention to, I liked. But it lost me a couple times. But yeah, I would say 3 out of 5 would be fair.
Well, see, a lot of it where I'm coming from is the influence factor, because
this
movie was one of the ones that would later influence Steve Jackson to create Auto Duel, or Car Wars, excuse me, which Auto Duel was made off of that. And so a lot of these Carmageddon-style games and movies were because of books like this. Now, this is actually, the movie is based on a book, but I'm going to say that this was probably what brought it more mainstream. The other reason why it gets 4 out of 5 is because, did you happen to notice who, there was the younger guy who never won. He was called Nero the Hero.
Oh, yeah.
He ends up, like, dying first. Did you pick up who that guy was? And it was funny because going back and watching it, I slapped my head going, I can't believe I didn't know this when I watched it a while back.
Wasn't he in Westerns?
You know where he was? He was the Cobra Kai sensei on the first Karate Kid.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
As soon as I saw him, I was like, oh my goodness, this is the best movie. Just because, I mean, the whole time he's driving, I could see him just like, tell me what the map is. What is the problem, Mr. Lawrence? You know, I mean, just like that man as the Cobra Kai sensei was like my nemesis growing up. Like, I had hatred for the man. And I mean, up there, I put him up there next to the child catcher on Chitty Chitty Bang Bang as far as hatred level. And so when I saw him in this, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's playing a nice guy. Yeah, his name is Martin Cove. And so everything he's in just automatically gets a point for me, kind of like where a lot of people would, you know, make jokes like, oh, it's got Chuck Norris. You know, for me, Martin Cove being in it was like, okay, that is worth it right there.
See, I'm looking at his IMDb profile right now. He was in Gunsmoke. That's probably where I got that from.
Yeah, he was. But, he was in Gunsmoke.
But he was also in Last House on the Left. He was the deputy. That was a movie. I love that movie. There's a lot of stuff. He has been in so many things. But it's kind of like with Mary Warnoff. You know, it's like one of everything, one of every, like, you know, major TV show he's been. Charlie's Angels, you know, Incredible Hulk he was in, Starsky and Hutch. I mean, that's like the big ones. Chips. Wow, this is crazy.
Yeah, he was in Walker, Texas Ranger. There's the hook with the Chuck Norris link. There
he
is.
Oh, there. It's very important. Oh, he was in Rambo. That's right.
Yes.
First Blood Part 2.
Yeah, he was in the second one. Yeah, he was when they were in the jungle together. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Yeah, so I would give it... I can see where you're coming from, though. I mean, there are movies that do that quite well. I mean, there's like, you know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which pretty much started everyone's careers. Dazed and Confused started so many careers. I mean, you know, this seems like one of those. And I think that's what you're... you're giving it that extra point for that, right?
It is. It's true. Well, and see, I break the mold on a lot of stuff. Like, I'm a movie buff, but I'm a backwards movie buff where I see a lot of movies and people go, that's a classic, an absolute classic. And I nod my head for a minute and then I go, I don't agree with you. And like, for example, people will be like, oh my gosh, you know, you've got to appreciate, Citizen Kane is the best movie ever made. You know what? I'll be honest. Citizen Kane had a lot of detail in it. It was also overrated. And people go, what? And then how dare you? And then I'll come in and bring in a different movie and then compare it. And I'll say, here's why this movie was my favorite movie. You know, there's a number of reasons, not just because of its influence, but because, you know, how creative was the director? How was the acting and everything? And so movies like that, you know, people are like, how dare you? And then I'll have another movie where it'll be kind of lesser known and I'll go, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go to your turn. What movie do you want to talk about?
Let's see. As far as movies go, you know what? And it's funny because I was talking with Sean about this, and I'm going to kind of break the mold here. I'm going to put out a little blurb that this is going to be a future episode because the movie that I finally watched, and shame on me because I haven't watched it in years, deserves an episode of its own, and that was Dr. Strangelove. You know, the Kubrick movie. And it's funny because I was younger when I saw it. Honestly, the reason I haven't watched it between now and then was because that seems to be like the one, you know, the Kubrick movie that's hardest to get as far as, you know, availability. It's kind of like that Star Trek episode where you're like, I want to watch it, but it's never the one on. It's always the rerun. And then you have to buy the box set to get really just to watch the one. It was kind of like that. Mm-hmm. But what I did want to kind of break the mold on was, I did want to jump it to a game, but I say that with this throwing out there that it's as close to, you know, how games are nowadays. They're almost movies into themselves.
Oh yeah.
And this game, I kind of walked out of it feeling like, wow, that almost was a movie because of the way you're watching and the way you're, you know, the things you do in it, how cinematic it was, and that is Metro Last Light.
Nice.
Which we touched on briefly in the past, but just to kind of set the stage, because there was a lot of, you know, confusion over it, like, is it, because they were releasing specs for the game that would be, like, unheard of. I mean, when somebody recommends the new NVIDIA Titan card, everybody kind of goes, are you serious? And that's not true. I have kind of a low, not to say lower end computer, I have a mid range computer and it ran just fine. But a lot of people came away from the first one kind of feeling like, okay, what's up there? And so what I'm going to say as far as, you know, touching on this is if you can get a hold of it, and it's, you might have to do some looking because I don't know if it's available in the US, but there is a book on tape, unabridged, of Metro 2033. Either get that, because the guy does an amazing job, or read the book first. then go back and play Metro Last Light, because it was probably the most amazing experience I've had. And we've lucky, because this year, you know, we've had a couple of amazing experiences with you know, BioShock Infinite, and you know, it's rare we get these kind of games that we come out of going, well, I feel like I just touched heaven for a second there. You know, usually we don't get good stories, but let's just say this one's a direct sequel to Metro 2033, and it was cut, but it's in a story of its own. But as far as post-apocalyptic, you know, ambience and the look of things, you know, seeing downtown Moscow, you get to see much more. You get to see flashback sequences of what happened when the bombs fell. Boy, I was in love with that, you know, day one, just from playing it. And so if you haven't played it, you know, and do you still have your Xbox?
Yeah.
Have you played it yet?
No, I haven't.
You need to hook up. It's on Xbox. And it, I think you'll have an absolute riot with it, because the first one was a lot more, fighting. This one, it seems to me, a lot more drama and a lot more ambience, and whereas they kind of throw you through areas quick as you could, this one has a lot more, you have to stop and listen and really pay attention and watch the detail. And it was, as far as post-apocalyptic stories, Metro 2033 honestly just moved up my list really high to the top after reading the book, playing the games. So, and the sad thing is that one, I know I'm kind of alone in that, because I don't know a lot of people who have either read the book or played the game, but I recommend it to everyone who has. So,
especially doing both, I think a lot of people. I didn't even know there was a book, so that's.
Yeah, I had to do some looking for that one, and the guy who does it. Okay, this is a perfect example. Have you ever heard the Lord of the Rings or the Hobbit unabridged book on tape?
Yeah.
Where the guy who reads it does an amazing job of trying to replicate each person's individual voice.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy does the same thing, and he sounds like I always like, every time I hear his voice, I think of the main character in the show Daywatch, that Russian film Daywatch and Nightwatch. You know, the main character. And so it's funny that it sounds just like him, but the guy does a really good job of trying to replicate the voice and make, you know, emphasis on things, rather than some people who sound like, you know, the dude on Ferris Bueller trying to read, you know, it's which there's a few of those, funny enough, especially when it's an unabridged book on tape. You're like, great, I'll be asleep in the next rest stop. That'll be awesome. But this, I'll tell you, if you had any hesitation, check it out. Amazing game, amazing story. As far as cinematics go, I was blown away by how much of a step above the first one it was by far.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, do.
I might have to wait for the next Xbox, though.
Oh, yeah, oh, man. That's moving like light speed. Whew.
End of the year, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, let's see. The other movie I wanted to talk about was Bellflower. Now, if, like I mentioned, we talk about this stuff on our Facebook group page, and I did talk about it a little bit on there. Literally right after I watched it, I had to go on there and say something. So, it was it's one of those movies that really kind of impacts you, you know, big time. I think I wasn't expecting it. What it was, I'll tell you kind of the sequence of events here of me watching it. I saw the little blurb on Netflix. It had a picture of a car, an old, like, Buick GTX or something like that, and it's in black primer, and it says Medusa on the side, and I'm like, wow, that looks pretty cool. And then I read the little blurb about it, and it says, here, I'll just read it. It says, two friends spend all their free time building flamethrowers and weapons of mass destruction in hopes that a global apocalypse will occur and clear the runway for their imaginary gang, Mother Medusa. So I read that, and I'm like, you can't get any better than that. What's, you know, this is the ultimate movie ever. Well, then I read a little bit further, and it said that they were, their biggest idol, I guess you could say, was Lord Humongous. And they keep quoting Lord Humongous in the movie, and I'm like, wait. I need to watch this right now. Like, this is a great, because the thing that got me was that me and my best friend growing up, we did this kind of stuff. I mean, we didn't build we kind of did build flamethrowers, but we built, you know, we were kind of crazy like that. Like, we would build stuff, and we would always talk about how, you know, we would want to, what we would do in the apocalypse, and, you know, I think I've talked about all this before, but, you know, we were big into this, and we watched Mad Max 1,000 times, and we would talk about, you know, we'd quote the movie, and it, to have this movie basically be about that, it was like, I don't even care what the rest of the movie is really about. I'm just going to watch this. This sounds great. So I start watching it, And it turns out, actually, that this movie won awards. It won a bunch of independent movie film awards. And I didn't even know that before. But it's kind of a hipster, you know, like, it's kind of a, it's not a cult classic, but, you know, whatever the hipster version of that is, you know, where it's like, you know, an indie movie. So it's, oh yeah, I've seen that movie. One of those kind of things. But it's a very, very low budget. I think it says $17,000 they spent making this. And
yeah.
the camera they used was built by the writer and director and main star, the main actor. He wrote, directed, starred, and built the camera, and he built that car that was in the movie. So this is a very, very low budget movie, and it's beautiful. I mean, you'd be able to tell that it's low budget because it's very, I don't know how to say it. It's kind of artsy though, in the way that they do it, where they have, you know, the one camera and it's kind of a shaky cam and things like that. But it's so beautifully done. I mean, the shots are brilliant. The acting is incredible. I mean, I started watching it and it almost felt like I was watching a behind the scenes at first. These guys are sitting there, they're talking about what they're going to do. They're going to build this flamethrower, and they're not just like, yeah, dude, let's get this flamethrower. They're like, you know, they're like inventors, and they're sitting there thinking of, you know, all the different aspects of the flamethrower that they need to do to get it to shoot further and things like that. I mean, so it's kind of a, you know, the conversation that they're having, it seems so real. It doesn't seem scripted. It's just like a couple of guys talking, you know, a couple of guys talking about building a flamethrower. You know, it's just everyday thing that happens when you talk about that. So I it really hooked me right from the beginning. And I, you know, that acting and the cinematography, all that really hooked me. And at this point, I kind of forgot that it was supposed to be a movie about dudes, you know, that were kind of obsessed with the apocalypse. So they go through this, they're talking, and like in the thing it says their imaginary gang, Mother Medusa. They don't really talk about a gang. They're just kind of like, I mean, at one point they joke about it, but it's not like a gang, you know, like you think. So it's just these guys, and they're kind of, you know, the main character moved from Wisconsin to L.A., and the other guy lives in L.A., and they're roommates, and, you know, they're probably 20-somethings, you know, maybe early 20s, and they're just kind of, you know, I don't know if they're jobless, but I know that they don't really have a lot of money. They just kind of, you know, live day to day. They don't have a lot of worries in the world. And at one point, they go to this bar, and the main character meets this girl. They're actually in a cricket eating contest, which is funny. And he meets this girl, falls in love with her, and then it starts progressing into this kind of romantic, kind of an awkward romantic comedy type of a thing. But it's real. Again, it sticks to that real thing. It's like they're just talking to each other, and they're like, so, you know, what should we do now? You know, it's almost uncomfortably awkward. But that was me, you know, in high school and college, so I can relate to that. So it was fine. It kind of spoke to me on that level. So anyway, he falls in love with this girl. They start hanging out. I think it's their first date. They kind of set up this date. They get together and they're like, "What do you want to do? I want to," you know. He got her flowers, and she's like, "Look, I don't want to do all this, you know, stupid, you know, boring stuff. Let's do something crazy. What's the craziest place you've ever been? Craziest thing you've ever done?" And he's like, "Well, we, you know, there's this restaurant, and you know, me and my roommate Aiden, that's his name. Me and Aiden and I, we, you know, we went to this place and it was crazy. Let's go there." And she's like, "Yeah, let's do it. Where's it at?" "It's in Texas." And they live in California. So she's like, "We're gonna drive to Texas on our first date? Yeah, let's do it." So they drive all the way to Texas on their first date. In this old, I think it's a Volvo, and he actually, being an inventor, he puts a still in there so that it actually, he can pour vodka from the dashboard. So they're sitting there getting hammered, drunk, driving to Texas, and just being, you know, it's a very kind of irresponsible, you know, early 20s movie, you know, at that point. And again, you're kind of like, where's the apocalypse part? You know, where's this? So they're going through this. They're, you know, they're being just silly, and then they go to Texas, and he ends up getting in a fight with a guy, and that's kind of crazy. And then it starts having like these flashback parts. Like it starts showing these things that happened later. It kind of like Memento, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting because then you're like, wait, what? When is that going to happen? What happened in between there? You know. But then later on, they fill in the gaps, which is really great. And I guess this would be a good time to say that there are going to be spoilers here. if you want to see this movie spoiler free, you might not want to listen to the rest of this. But anyway, so. They go on this trip, they really have a great time, they come back, they're more in love than ever, you know, all this stuff, and she loves him more because he got in a fight over her, you know, because this guy was hitting on her and blah, blah, blah. So they get back and they're just really kind of reckless in love, you know, crazy in love kind of people, and it gets to the point where it fast forwards a little bit and he's got a beard now, so you can tell that it's later on, you know, a couple years later, and they're, maybe it's about a year later, and they're living together and they're kind of doing their thing. And, you know, throughout here, we're seeing, like, their other friends and you know, they go to parties and they get to mingle. So you get these other characters in there, too. But then it comes to a point where she cheats on him. And he goes a little crazy. And he catches her cheating at one point. And he jumps on his motorcycle. And this is, let me backtrack a second. When they were on that trip to Texas, they traded their car in for an old Mad Max motorcycle, because they saw this motorcycle and they were like, this is one of the things we have to do is get a Mad Max motorcycle, so let's trade our car in for this motorcycle. So then they drove back home on a motorcycle. It's just crazy. But anyway, so he jumps on his motorcycle, he's you know, really mad, and he gets hit by a car, just full on smashed right by a car, and he's in the hospital for a long time. And while he's recovering, she, you know, basically dumps him and starts living with this other guy that she was cheating on him with and all that stuff. So, you know, that part, he's a wreck, physically and emotionally. And this is the part where he's really starting to break, like his mind is breaking. And he gets to the point where he just doesn't really care about a lot of stuff. And he actually takes his flamethrower at one point, goes to her house, takes all of her stuff, he puts it in a box, takes all of her stuff to her house, puts it in the lawn, and shoots it with a flamethrower. And it's a great scene because it's an over the top flamethrower. It just shoots like 20 feet. It's not like just, you know, a little like lighting something on fire. It's like burning the whole yard. It's just crazy. And she's yelling at him, blah, blah, blah. So they go back and forth, you know, they're fighting back and forth, and they're kind of one upping each other. At one point she gets a tattoo artist to tattoo a beard on his face, like to kidnap him and tattoo a beard on his face. And like, I don't know what was up with that, but that was just, he was at that point, he was just, you know, he wanted to kill her. So, he goes to her house and you think he's going to kill her. And then they start making out and all this, you know, and you're like, oh God. So they're like, they're going to make up. But then it shows him leaving the house and he's covered in blood. And you're like, okay, good. He killed her. Right? I mean, no, not good. I mean, oh, he killed her. So he's leaving the house. He's covered in blood. He's walking outside. And then she comes running after him. So you're like, okay, he didn't kill her. Where's all that blood from? Like, what happened? And she's covered in blood too. So you're like, I don't know what's happening. So he's walking down the street in this very, it's like a really artsy, you know, slow motion, like, you know, shot of the year kind of a scene here. He's walking down the street and his girlfriend, he gets a new girlfriend, you know, in there, which is the other girl's friend, and I don't want to explain all that, but and she comes running up to him and she's like, what are you doing? Why? What happened? Why do you have blood all over you? And he takes a gun out and shoots her in the head. Whoa, halt there. What I meant to say was she shoots herself in the head. He doesn't shoot her in the head. I don't know what I was talking about. So, back to the show. And you're like, what? 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 You know, like, what just happened? And the way they do it, it's so... That's all of it right there. That's the whole point, is they do it so surprisingly. Because he's just walking... She's yelling at him, and he pulls out a gun and shoots her head, and it doesn't cut away, it doesn't do anything, and just her brains fly out, and I mean, it's really graphic, it's just, I don't know. It's just one of those things where that's one of the first time, or I guess one of the first times in a long time I've like yelled when I've been like, holy crap, you know, like what just happened? You know, usually I'll watch movies and something like that will happen and I'll be like, wow, that was pretty amazing. But this one, like I had to yell. It's just, it's hard to explain. I do it no justice. But the movie ends very strangely, and that part I won't give away, but it's, oh man. It's so funny though, because the part with the car, like, you know, we're talking about that Medusa car. His friend, in the movie, his friend builds it for him. He buys him this old car, he paints it primer black, he builds flame stacks on the top that shoot flames out. His friend is like the best friend anyone can have. Like, he does anything for this guy. So he built him this car, and he just races around with these flames shooting out of the top, and they're quoting Lord Humongous lines, you know, and it's like those kind of parts are amazing, you know. It's very much like a like taking you back to your childhood, you know, when you are quoting Mad Max all the time and everything. So I mean, I think aside from those parts, like those kind of things, the rest of the movie doesn't really have anything to do with the apocalypse, but I think that it's tying those things in, like only someone who appreciates Mad Max and Lord Humongous and things like that to the level that we do and our listeners do, it makes it that much sweeter. You know what I mean? Like you're watching this movie and you're like, wow, that's, you know, I get that. I get that line from Lord Humongous. I get why they want this car, because it's like, you know, the V8 Interceptor, and like why they want to do this, why they want to build a flamethrower, because they had those in the, you know, in Road Warrior. And it's just, I don't know. It's like, those are the little sweet parts on top of this amazingly shot, amazingly acted and amazingly written movie. So I would definitely give this 5 out of 5, flamethrowers.
Oh yeah. No, I'm with you on that. And see, the people who watch this movie, they're going to be divided into two camps. There's going to be the people who love the movie. And then there's going to be the people who hate it because they didn't understand what they were looking at. And the only way I can really compare it is the first thing I thought of watching this just by the style is it was very David Lynch. The first thing I thought of was Mulholland Drive, because Mulholland Drive, you know, you're watching what appears to be a normal movie, and then in the last 10 minutes, the movie goes completely to hell, and everybody who watches it goes, what the freak just happened? But those who are paying attention or go back and watch it again start picking up, okay, that's where the movie really, that's where the meaning behind it starts to kick in, and, you know, everything has meaning to it. I mean, anybody who watched Twin Peaks knows that, but this was very David Lynch style, and I the whole time I was watching something, and these kids had to have taken a cue from him just in the way they told the story, because what you're not watching just a movie about a couple of kids who want, you know, who love Lord Humongous. They're touching on the concept of everything that encompasses and everything that is him, and meanwhile the whole time. Because, you know, without spoiling the ending, that, you know, it does a kind of a twist, and the whole time you're kind of going, wait a minute, what? Did that just happen? You know, and you're kind of trying to figure out why it happened. And there's a lot of hidden meaning underneath. It's one of those, like, meanings where you know, it's funny, I researched it when I first watched it. The guy who wrote and directed it, he won't even say, because he says that everybody's going to have a little bit different of a meaning from it. And they're gonna come out of it with kind of a different feel to what they just saw, and it's interesting because everybody does. They end up kind of coming out of it going, you know, these things were amazing to me, you know, despite how some people would watch and go, man, what the freak just happened? It turned this like gore insanity fest of crazy, and I'm like, and you know, it's like, yeah, you know, look at the whole big picture of what they were doing and the fact that they were, you know, imagining a world that had come apart, and, you know, everybody's going to read into different, but like one of the things I picked up on was, you know, he became the villain. He became Lord Humongous, and look where, you know, maybe he learned from that, you know, maybe he didn't realize that wasn't the wisest choice, and maybe it wasn't, you know, what he wanted, or, you know, we glorified like the post-apocalyptic idea, but when it really does come down to anarchy, is it everything we, you know, we want? For me, the answer is absolutely yes. But that's another story.
Exactly.
Great movie, and though.
You're absolutely right. It's like they were so obsessed about this Hollywood version of the apocalypse, and then it ended up where they had their own version of the apocalypse, and it was not a worldwide apocalypse. It was their own. I mean, you know, the best friend killed someone, and he had to run away, and then we never saw him again. And then, and it was an accident. You know, he was defending his friend actually, and then at the end, you know, the main character shoots that girl in the head, and you're like, what? You know, it's just like, it's crazy, and that's, I think it's so much more powerful. Now, I love a good nuclear, apocalypse movie, but it's so much more powerful than that, because you're just like, what? Like, you know, there's, like you said, that David Lynch last 10 minutes insanity. It's just like, whoa, it's crazy.
Yeah, it was very Lynch style, where everything just falls apart at the end, and you're left kind of going, what the freak did I just watch? And, I mean, I will say it goes a little easier than that, because David Lynch, man, that guy has meaning up the yin-yang that even he, only he knows. But this one, I mean, I kind of came out of it going, okay, it ended on a different note than I was afraid of, because I figured I was just going to end up watching a ton of, you know, meaning, and that was it. But in the end, there was kind of a twist, and it was kind of interesting to throw it out there, because it kind of solidified a lot of the symbolism there. So if you're somebody who, and I'm not saying if you like David Lynch, because there's a lot of people who hate David Lynch, but if you understand like how a David Lynch movie thinks, or watch the movie Memento, you know, went into it going, okay, don't just take it all in and analyze it, watch it, then go think about it, and then maybe even watch it again now that you know it, and try again. Yeah. And if you're one of those kind of people that enjoys movie with meaning behind it, you'll appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, it is a gem in the rough, and you can see where, you know, it got a lot of acclaim. I mean, for shooting that on $17,000, that's he broke the code on what independent filmmakers are supposed to be able to do, and for what it cost, it was pretty. He made a pretty good amount of money off of it.
Yeah, I think on IMDb it said like $200,000 something.
Yeah, I mean, which is light years ahead. I mean, who knows? Maybe it got him some acclaim, and you know, a lot of people bag on the actors for their acting. What I saw wasn't guys not acting. What I saw was the guys, you know, the acting was part of the symbolism, because when things rev up, the guy's acting like all of a sudden went into overdrive, and yeah, he went from being kind of like a goofball looking talking guy to all of a sudden he was like hardcore into it, and I'm like, this guy played that part of that way on purpose. Yeah. He knew exactly what he was doing, and I was impressed. That the girl who played the main girl, she did a phenomenal job for being a no-namer.
Jesse Wiseman.
She did amazing job. She kept looking like somebody I had seen before, and I was driving me crazy. Like, have I seen that girl in something else? But she hasn't been. But she did a great job.
I kind of had that feeling too. I kept thinking like, she looks so familiar, but this is her first movie. Yeah, it looks like it is.
Yeah, I think it pretty much, everybody else kind of had a lot of the, you know, teen, you know, horror flick kind of upbringing in some form, a lot of them. But like the other chick, I think she's been in like a bunch of B-movies, which, you know, more power to her, you know. But this chick, I mean, it's, you know, there's some, I'll preface by saying be careful, because, you know, don't watch this with kids in your room, because there's some pretty gratuitous parts in it. But again, where most people would be like, what the frack was that? You know, I saw meaning there. I mean, even in the way that it happened, you're almost like, I see what you did there. You know, everything became all of a sudden anarchistic and barbaric, and you're kind of like, oh, wow, you know? It was well done.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a it's a primal show, too. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, he goes a little nuts. He goes very, very nuts at the end. And I like at the end too, where they tie everything together. Like, for example, the fight scene that I mentioned when they went to Texas. When you're watching it while it's going, the guy says something about his girlfriend, and then she's like, no, it's okay. And then he's like, what'd you say? And he comes up and he confronts the guy, and then they're driving away. And then it shows him driving away, and he's got, you know, a couple bruises on his face, but that's really it. And he's like, can you believe I just got in a fight? And you're like, wait, what happened? But at the end, they actually show it. They show what happened in that fight, and they show how he won, how he's able to beat this dude that was bigger than him, you know. But they kind of tie up a lot of those loose ends, and they go back and they kind of explain just even, you know, even like little 5-second snippets from earlier in the movie, and you're like, oh, that makes sense. And it's almost overwhelming, because they're tying all these loose ends all at once. You know what I mean? They're like showing all these little snippets, and you're like, okay, that's why that happened. Okay, that's why that happened. Yeah, I see. You know, and but I love that because it's overwhelming almost. It's like and then he shoots the girl in the head.
Yeah,
I have to keep saying that.
It was chaos. I mean, it moves fast. So again, I'd say you almost want to watch it and just let it take you for the ride, let it get to the end, and then go, what the bleep just happened? And then go sit down and watch it one more time. And this time, when you watch it knowing what happens at the end and watch what's going on and what they're trying to kind of portray. And if again, if you like artsy films like that that have a lot of meaning, you'll probably love it.
Yeah. I mean, like I said that I had some spoilers there, and I kind of did, but I think that it's like you said, even if you watch it the first time, you have to watch it again. So even my spoilers were still not enough to, you know, to solve the movie for you. You still want to watch it, and then you'll have to watch it again still to, you know, to get that full thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. Did you have any other movies or games you want to talk about?
Actually, just one more to touch on really quick, and I'll keep it brief. This one is one where I'll throw out there that, again, it, you know, God bless Netflix for this. You know, they give us many new and old films. One of them is a movie I probably wouldn't have just picked up on a whim, but I was interested in because, you know, it's a newer movie, but I have to say that, go into this one. This one isn't necessarily having a lot of meaning behind it, but it was just a great ride. Have you seen the movie Stakeland?
No.
Okay, the movie came out a couple years ago, but what it is basically, and they don't go into too much detail, you can almost, it's basically about a younger boy in a world where the apocalypse took place because there was a vampire a pandemic. And so the whole world is undead. It's a lot like kind of like Daybreakers in that style, where, but in this case, it's the vampires are genuinely horrific. I mean, it's like The Road meets a vampire movie. But anyways, this boy befriends this stranger who saves his life, and the guy who plays the main character gets my vote for being a guy that I had never seen before. The guy plays the part absolutely stunning, and he probably is what makes the movie work. And it's basically about a lot of these things that they run into and people they save and people they help. And it just has this very dark overtone. Funny enough, there's even a part where they meet up with this nun. And the whole time I was like, you know, I saw this nun, I'm thinking, man, she kind of looks familiar. I go back and I look, it's Kelly McGillis from Top Gun.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, well, wow. Okay. Yeah. Cause I didn't even recognize her cause I guess she would be like almost 60 by now, but, yeah, anyway, I don't know if that's true. Somewhere out there, somebody's like, that wasn't very nice. But, if you're looking for a great wild ride, kind of like, it doesn't necessarily have so much of a point. It is just a great, you know, kind of a lower budget movie. And then manages to kind of take you for a fun ride on it. I'd say watch it because as far as vampire apocalypse movies go, and even up against movies like, you know, Priest, which I thought was a great vampire movie, but this was one of my favorites just because of how gritty and well done it was directed and done.
Wait, what was the name of this again?
It's called Stakeland.
You know, I think I did see this. Stakeland. That's horrible that I don't remember that I didn't remember that before. When you're talking about it, though, I'm like, yes, I do remember that. And then you said Kelly McGillis, and I'm like, yes, I remember her as the – she had short hair, yeah.
Yeah, she had really short hair, and they end up getting kind of like – it's even got the human element where they get captured by a group called the Brotherhood, and one of the guys is like, you killed my son, so I'm going to kill you now. And I think that was a line from you killed my brother? Never mind. Anyway, yeah, but it was just a good fun ride. And I mean, it's one of those where if you want a great popcorn flick, just sit down and watch this. I mean, I'd throw it up there against, you know, movies like the movie Priest, which are just, you know, great fun. You're not necessarily watching it to be like, you know, learn about the history of the world, but you're watching it just to have a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool. Cool. Was there anything you wanted to pimp as far as, you know, things you're working on right now?
Actually there is. I figured this probably deserves some explanation. I went radio silent for a while there. That was as intended. And the reason was because as I was starting to release a lot of information about what was going on with my mod, I was realizing that I was probably saying too much because I wanted so much of it to be you know, a surprise, but also because it does, it builds hype and, you know, it makes people like, well, are we getting it tomorrow? When, you know? And I've finally gotten to a point now after working on it. Geez, it's been all about a year and a half, 2 years. And remember, I'm a one man team. So I'm doing it is a lot of work and I wanted to do it the right way. So finally I'm to the point where that, radio silence is going to stop here. And so you're going to start hearing a lot more here as the months go on, as little blurbs and things I'm going to do where I'm going to talk about, like, you know, how to install mods. Actually, there's some great new things for Fallout that have come out that weren't there before as far as installing mods that will help. But I'm going to go over, like, my favorite mods, little bits and pieces about behind-the-scenes things. But as far as being able to tell you about a release date, somebody had thrown out to me, are we going to see it this year? And my answer is yes.
Oh,
You will see it this year. And I apologize. It's not to say that there was a delay, because there wasn't one. I knew it needed to be done. It just takes time, and I wanted to do it right. And it isn't so much even a feature creep thing or I changed the story halfway through. It's more of a, I knew exactly what it needed to be. I just had to make sure I was good at doing it and doing it properly, because the GEC editor is a horrible beast when it's not played with nicely. And I realized partly what I was doing was, first of all, it was going to be kind of unstable, but I needed to learn more about it. But I also, you know, had to go and refine a lot of my skills on some, you know, on like Photoshop and stuff. And so I spent quite a bit of time, I think I touched on the last time, but, you know, trying to learn these things. But what I have come up with now and what I'm looking at now has been just light years ahead of what I expected. And the only thing I'm worried about is that I haven't tried it with anybody else's computer. I've only been playing it on my own two computers. So it's always that fear that, you know, I'm going to throw it out to somebody and they're going to go, yeah, it doesn't even load, you know, that's why there'll be a couple, you know, people I'm going to handpick if, you know, hey, will you be willing to, you know, beta test this and run through this game, run through this mod as quick as you can and see what you like and what you don't like. And if everything goes the way it should, I'll tell you, it's probably been one of the largest, most demanding but fulfilling projects I've ever done, now that I'm seeing it come together. And there are the amount of inside jokes and humor alone could be a book of itself, but there's so much under the hood of it. I mean, just the radio station alone, and it's funny, that was me and Sean had actually recorded about three quarters of it, and I had held off recording the rest only because I wanted to kind of, you know, evolve it and make sure that everything we had recorded was going to be legit and everything else. And we're now to that point where I'm like, okay, we're down to the 11th hour, and it's getting to the point now where I just need to plug in all the actual real dialogue, because right now there's, you know, placeholder dialogue and stuff. But so I can't wait to show everybody what I've been doing for 2 years. And it's so it's so sad that I kind of had to go radio silent, but I knew for myself to it would be better for me to disappear and come back and go, here it is, rather than just kind of keep talking about it and not really have a chance to show you what I wanted to. I hope that all makes sense. But I know a lot of people will be like, you're still making the mod, or you know, oh yeah, it never stopped. In fact, it is on my mind constantly, and you know, even little things here and there, you know, I'll be like, that's a great idea, and I'll kind of add that in a little bit. And but it's been a lot of fun just for other things I've been doing, you know, learning the skills and everything else. But and then Fallout 4 will probably come out in E3, so who knows? But and somebody will probably say that, like, are you going to make it for the new one? I'm like, at this point, no.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe there will be an E3. All signs point to Bethesda releasing what their next project will be at E3, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's a couple weeks away. Wow.
Yeah, we're getting very close already, and that's the other problem is time just flies lately.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to show you guys what I've been doing. It's I hope it's not one of those where people are going to go, oh, that's pretty good, but it's like, that's 2 years, man. But it's hard to do a one-man team, though.
Yeah. I think that's the big thing as far as time. And plus you have kids and, you know, you're married and you have all this other stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the thing. You have to have balance. And, you know, I work on it, you know, at least a little bit daily, but that, you know, doesn't mean it's all die hard. Sometimes you do have to break off for a second and breathe and, you know, play a little stalker on the side. Now, that is the game, not literally that I was stalking someone. although I am told that, you know, there are those at Bethesda who would say otherwise, but, you know, nothing's been proven. So I say whatever.
You cover your tracks.
That's right. I cover my tracks well. Or no, if I had done it, it would have been tracks.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm really excited to see this. And I think, you know, it's been going on so long that I think that when I first recorded with you, that was before I reached puberty, I think. I was, so my voice might be a little different now.
I did have to bump up the, you know, bring the pitch down just a notch. Like, I'll probably just to make it match up. Actually, that is the biggest trick, is being able to get it to, like, I think grand total, I went through and realized that there was, like, a psychotic amount of hours of dialogue, and some of it is just from the actual game. And there are some places where I actually have thrown in deliberate jokes to keep from having to, obviously, you know, having a character with you at all given times can be tricky in some places, depending on what the area looks like. And so I'll throw in the cliche, like, I'm going to go up here and scout ahead. Well, why are you going to do that? Because if I don't, I'll get stuck in the scenery, you know, and they're like, oh, okay. But and since it's a comedy, it's, you know, part comedy, it'll work. But there's the parts I'm excited about the most are the flashback sequences. And I touched on them a little bit last time we talked, but yeah, there's a couple of parts that are actually very serious, and the humor isn't there because it's not supposed to be. It's kind of like a flashback to when the bombs fell, and I was really taken back at how well it came out. You know, once I get everything, like the girl's voice recorded, whose journal you're reading later, it'll be interesting to see.
Wow, that sounds,
so, yeah, we should have some cool. Some teaser stuff coming out here pretty quick. So
cool. You're gonna get the Blur studio to do the cinematic. trailer for it.
Actually, it's funny. When you see the cinematic trailer, like, I've already got in my mind how it's going to look, and it's using, you know, because there's so much cinematics already in the game as it is, I'm just going to, you know, take clips of that, and then I'm already going to wait till you read the intro sequences. Like, you know, the little slideshows that they always do at the beginning and end? There's some stuff that is just absolutely hysterical about how this plays out, because, you know me, I can't, I've got to take cliche and twist it. Yes. And make it ridiculous, and so when you go in thinking you're going to play it a certain way, it's going to turn on you and be something else. And but I think overall, like, you know, it'll be a lot of fun to see both sides. You know, the people who want to play the adventure, which I absolutely beg you to do, because there's just so much in it. But I'm even tempted with the idea of just having there be, like, you can go in and push a quick button and have the radio station just be on, and, you know, oh, you're going to cheat. All right, well, here you go. You know, but we'll see. I'm excited to see what everybody thinks.
Cool. Cool, very cool. Let's see. As far as me, I have one project I want to talk about. I've done costuming before, and I've talked about the costuming, and, you know, I've talked about going to Dragon Con, and that was that. That was like 2 years ago, I think, 2.5 years ago when I went, and I brought my post-apocalyptic costume. You know, well, it's one of those things where I think about it all the time. So I started doing more pieces. I started making, you know, a new costume. I didn't go to Dragon Con last year, but it got to the point where I would think about making costumes all the time. Well, this year I'm actually going to go. My wife, for my birthday present, my birthday is the week after Dragon Con, for my birthday present, she's watching both kids and letting me go to Dragon Con by myself. So, I mean, that's like a huge, huge birthday present. So I'm going to go, and I started making this costume, and it got a little bit beyond that. I started making more costumes. I started making more things that, you know, besides just for me. So I kind of wanted to make a website and, you know, get this going to where I'm kind of documenting the costumes that I'm making, the pieces that I'm making. And I don't have all the videos up yet. I have two videos, but they're at aftermathapparel.com. It's aftermath-apparel.com. So it's, well, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But right now, all it is, it just has two videos on it. One of them, I show how to make these quick little bolt heads for out of foam, because everybody uses foam, this EVA foam for costuming. And the other one, I made this kind of an axe halberd that's a post-apocalyptic. It has like rusty chains on it, and it's, you know, rusty, beaten up metal, but it's all made out of foam and plastic. And I show some techniques on how, I mean, this is stuff I've been doing for, you know, quite a while. So I finally figured I would sit down and record myself showing some of the techniques that I use to make this, you know, with dry brushing paint techniques and using a Dremel on the foam to make it look like metal. And I even have some feathers on there because it's kind of like a spear. It's a really long pole arm with an axe head on one side, and then it has some feathers up there to make it look kind of tribal, because I'm really big into, you know, kind of like that Chota thing, you know, like a primitive post-apocalyptic. Like,
yeah.
That's my ideal post-apocalyptic, is like going back to, like, you know, like Native American tribal.
Yeah, the tribal
kind
guy.
Of, yeah. So that's kind of the costuming that I make more often. So I'm kind of mixing, like, this axe has, you know, bolts in it holding, there's like a metal bracket. It's made out of foam, but it's, you know, a metal bracket holding this metal blade on this metal pole, and it's all screwed on, and it has a rusty chain holding it together, but it's all foam and plastic. Like, the metal pole is actually PVC pipe that I used a heat gun to bend it to make it look like it's, you know, a bent up metal pole. Painted it all rusty, dirty, dingy, and then dry brushed it to make it look like it's all scraped up and everything. So, I mean, that's kind of, this is something that I do all the time anyway. I think about it all the time. I'm always drawing pictures, you know, trying to design new costuming weapons, costuming, you know, shoulder pads and, you know, chest pieces. And like, I'm always thinking of doing this kind of thing. So I figure I would make a website and just kind of get all this together. And eventually what I'd like to do is maybe do commission pieces for people. Because I didn't even know. Like, this is something I've, you know, been interested in forever, and I've only started actually really doing it. But I didn't even know that there's actually a business out there for this kind of thing. There are a lot of prop makers. Most of the prop makers, they make, like, you know, Mass Effect guns, and then they resell them. But there's a market for that. There's a huge market. If you go on, like, DeviantArt, there are a lot of people who make some amazing costumes. Costumes. Not only, I mean, Mass Effect is a big one, but also Skyrim. Everyone's making Skyrim costumes. But also LARPers. There are a lot of LARPers, and LARPing isn't what it used to be. I mean, LARPing used to be, you know, you get a piece of foam, make a foam bat, you know, get a plastic bat, wrap it in foam and duct tape, and then that was your sword. Well, now, I mean, people are making some amazingly realistic stuff. I guess on the fantasy side of what I'm interested in is the orcs, you know, the greenskins. The post-apocalyptic tribal thing plays well on that side of, you know, on the fantasy side of it, because the orcs use very primitive-looking weapons, and so I've started making orc stuff too, like orc weapons, orc costumes, things like that. So it's just, I don't know, it's just one of the things that just kind of exploded, and I haven't really talked about it a lot. You know, I talked about it on the show, how I'm interested in it, but I never really mentioned that I'm doing it. So I figured I would get this website. Hopefully I'll be able to get more videos on here very soon. It's just a matter of sitting down and doing it. But yeah, I hope to get some more videos on there, and, you know, I'm hoping everyone who listens to this, it might be something they are interested in, at least watching these videos and, you know, checking it out. Hopefully I'll get some more content on there. But it's funny, because on the About page on that website, there's a picture. I tell a little bit about myself, but I also put a picture of me when I'm about 13. I'm about 12 or 13. And I used to make latex masks when I was younger. That was all I wanted to do when I grew up. You know, people like Tom Savini were my idols. You know, Dick Smith. I mean, the people who did, like, you know, the Twilight Zone special effects and Creepshow and stuff like that. Those were my idols. So when I was like 12 or 13, I used to make these latex masks, and I used to make, like, so I have this picture of me, and it's funny because I showed my wife, and she's like, I don't know why I married you. but it's this picture of me, and I made this burn out of latex that covers half my face, and there's an eyeball coming out and everything. Like, this is something I did when I was like 12 or 13, and so it's just kind of like, I put this up on the About Me page, just kind of showing that this has always been something that I've always been interested in. You know, I have a lot of interests, but this is one that's really been, you know, carried with me for 20 years probably. So yeah, that's my big project, I guess you could say.
That's cool though, because I mean, you nowadays it's becoming such a lost art, and yet you look at a lot of the movies nowadays, and they're, even though there is obviously the CGI factor, they are moving parts of it back to where they want it to be more authentic. I mean, like The Hobbit. I mean, for every CGI thing going on, somebody's in there doing the real deal, like making the swords for real, or actually creating the, you know, bags it the way they would be. And so it's cool to see people still you know, trying to keep on top of that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And
it's a great idea.
It's not only, you know, movies, but like I said, LARPing and cosplay, you know, oh, there's so many conventions and so many conventions that keep popping up, so many new ones. And people get really into this stuff. And I mean, I'm saying people as in myself, you know, I get way into this stuff. But I don't go into like, you know, the really popular stuff is like anime stuff and like game characters. I don't get into that side of it. I get into the kind of horror side of it. You know, I want to make some crazy, you know, scary stuff and you know, that and kind of bring that to, you know, to Dragon Con. I mean, the thing about Dragon Con is you can go as anything, but also you can switch costumes several times a day, you know, or every day or whatever you want to do. And then they have a parade there, and they have in the parade, everybody's in costume, and there are different, you know, sections of the parade with different, I mean, there's a post-apocalyptic part where everyone's dressed like, you know, Toe Cutter basically. And, you know, everybody's dressed like, Mad Max, and, you know, so it's, I don't know. It's this thing that I feel like I have to share now.
Well, and it'll be popular again with the new Mad Max movie coming out next year. I mean, I think it'll kind of do for Mad Max what, you know, the new Star Trek did for a lot of people who'd never watched it in a million years, but now like it because of the new one. And it's funny you mentioned Toe Cutter because he does a cameo in the new one.
Whoa. Nice.
If you get a chance, go peek that. That's a smile right there. But the Toe Cutter one, I of all the characters, he's still my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Even more than Lord Humongous. Don't get me wrong. I love Lord Humongous. But, I mean, there's something about Toe Cutter that's just that, like, right to the metal, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome you're doing that. That's cool. That's, you know, still keeping up the post-apocalyptic stuff on the side.
Yeah, it's a really huge interest, and it's something I think about all the time, and always designing something. And I think, like you said, you know, it's been growing over the years, but it's getting, you know, the post-apocalyptic everything is getting huge. And, like, have you ever heard of Wasteland Weekend?
I think so.
In L.A.? Yeah, it's a thing every year out in the middle of the desert in L.A. Actually, I don't think it's in L.A. I think it's east of L.A. toward the desert. And they just get everyone out there, and they just... It's kind of like Burning Man, which, yeah. Burning Man is another one where, you know, people dress up too. But I mean, Wasteland Weekend is more about, you know, actual like themed costumes. So people do some really amazing stuff on there too. And it's my biggest part. I mean, I'm making stuff out of foam, sure, but I love getting pieces of things that I find and kind of, you know, integrating them into this costume. I mean, when I moved to this farm, There was a lot of junk, you know, laying around, and I was able to go through and I found this barrel that was full of old, like rusty, they're like circle, like metal O's, kind of like metal circles, and they're not, you know, they're not sharp because they're round, and they're just things that I can attach to the costume on certain parts, you know, and do things, and just stuff like that, like, you know, finding old tires and like literally I have gone and driven down the highway and pulled off to the side of the road and collected tires so that I can cut them up and use them for parts of costume, you know, so that part of it is fascinating to me, you know, using old stuff and kind of making, but it becomes a practicality issue. You know, you can't have a full tire on you because you won't be able to really walk around with it. So
yeah.
it comes to the point when you're replicating things in foam, and that's kind of like this axe. I mean, it would be cool to make that out of metal, but it would be very heavy. So I'm making stuff out of foam, and foam is super cheap. There are a million videos on YouTube about using EVA foam for costuming. That's pretty much whatever. Basically, what it is it's the floor mat foam that you buy, that
yeah.
you put down, and it has like a puzzle piece edges that fit together, and then you can make like a floor mat for working out, whatever. Well, people buy that, they cut off the edges, and you can form it with a heat gun, and it'll stay. And then you can use a Dremel, you can grind it, you can sculpt it, and then
wow.
you can paint it. It paints really well. If you put primer on it, you can paint it really well. So, I mean, it's a really great, people make all kinds of costumes with that stuff. So I've been really getting into that, and yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's cool. Yeah, you'll have to keep us all updated on how it all goes.
Yeah, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes for that and Jonathan's page and the movie pages for the movies we talked about and the games and everything. All that will be in there.
That's right. There's a lot going on. We'll have a lot to talk about very soon.
Yeah, yeah. We should record again because the next show will be episode 50.
I know. We're going to have to make this a good one.
Yeah. We'll have to figure out something good.
50.
That'll be for next year, though, right?
We'll see how this plays out. It's funny. If everything goes the way I'm hoping with my mod, it might be before that. Just because what I'd probably do is, you know, have you obviously, you know, Sean will be one of the people beta testing it in some form. And I'm looking to, you know, get the early impressions.
Yeah.
It'll be cool to see how things go.
Yeah, definitely. And then we can record you know, when that is kind of, you know, approaching the launch, I guess you could say.
That's right.
Yeah.
The launch of my sanity.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up then. If anyone wants to send us an email, I would say I don't think that old email works anymore. So I would say you can go ahead and send it to my Gmail. It's just seanschuster@gmail.com. I have no problem with that. But if you go to throughtheaftermath.com, it's still there. Jonathan rezzed it from the ashes.
Yes.
So it's still there, and it has all the show notes and everything. So you can go on there and contact us in the comments, too, if you want to do that. Or on the Facebook page. We have our Through the Aftermath Facebook page. If you just do a search on Facebook for Through the Aftermath, you'll find us. It's a group. I think you have to request to get in because we were getting some spammers and stuff. But, yeah, it's a pretty nice little community because we talk about movies and games and everything. You know, if we can't sit down and record, I mean, this takes a while to record and to edit and all that, but sitting down on a Facebook page takes a second. You know,
that's
so
right.
it's a nice little conversation there. So yeah, reach out to us on one of those avenues, and you know, we're always I'm always on Facebook, so I will probably respond to something pretty quickly. But yeah, it was great recording again. It was great talking to you again on Skype and not just email. And,
that's
and we'll
right.
have to do this again very soon.
I know this. I know it almost sounds funny. Somebody out there is probably like, "This sounds ridiculous. You don't like this talking." It's been a while since we've, you know, talked again. See, there it is. There's the relationship with the show. She doesn't call. She doesn't write. But she shows up when she's drunk and needs money. That's Through the Aftermath, the way she treats me and Sean. So. You know,
so you did look and you did see it's a she now.
Oh man, you know, and it's true because that's how it is. It is a she. That's a long story, and I just, you know, I was young and I needed the money. I don't know what to say. There it is. There's your closing tripped out thought. Now go back and watch it again. Find the meaning behind it. There it is.
It all comes together at the end.
It all comes together at the end. Oh heavens!
All right. Well. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and till next time.
Stay alive out there! Why did awesome. I sing it? That I don't know why I... What was that? I had to like that. Ding, ding, goes the trolley. What was that? Why did I don't know. There's your part after the music at the end credits, I guess. Whew.